or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
It was kind of fun listening to the promo for Your Legal Rights, talking about avoiding fighting with spouses. Well, I have on the line with me my spouse, and those of you who've listened to the show a while know we are not averse to occasionally fighting on the air, but occasionally we're nice to each other. We'll see what's going to happen. I'm going to be giving a quiz to my wife called Do You Know How to Run a Meeting? All of us, whether we are at a fairly low level or a fairly high level in employment, are at meetings, run meetings, or aspire to run meetings instead of sitting through those endlessly boring things. We want to take charge, and we wouldn't do it that way. So I thought this might be a fun way to elucidate all of us on how to run a meeting well. So thank you, guinea pig, Dr. Barbara Nemko, the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, member of the State Superintendent's Cabinet, Superintendent of the Year a few years ago. Now, right, just this week, we just got the magazine from some educational technology magazine. You, Dr. Barbara Nemko, were named one of the 40 top educators in the nation on technology. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, okay.
And
well,
now you're going to show all the things I don't know.
That's right. All that crap's going to go by the boards because you're probably crappy at running a meeting. Well, no, you're probably not. But anyway, here we go. Let's get right to it. Why don't we give you, before I, you know, hammer at you with these questions, is there one thing that comes to mind for you that's not obvious that is the key to running a meeting well?
Well, I don't know if it's obvious or not, but a meeting should have a firm ending time. Meetings will expand to fill the time available. So you can't just say, let's meet at 2, because you'll be there until 5.
Okay. All right. Then let's just get right to it. So, of course, when we hear the word meeting, the first word that probably comes to mind for most people are boring.
Or,
yeah, what's another? For me, it's waste, like a waste of time. And yet, of course, a good meeting can be valuable and it may even be fun, right? What percentage of meetings that you run, Barbara, would you say, if they polled you, the meeting attendees where you run a meeting anonymously, what percentage would say that they found the meeting fun?
If it's my Napa County Reads Committee, they would say those meetings are incredibly efficient and fun and productive.
Good. Well, actually, before I get to the quiz, I keep coming up with things to ask you. So can you take us to one of those meetings? Paint a picture for us. What goes on at those meetings or at that particular meeting that might be instructive for all of us on how to make a meeting more efficient and fun?
Well, first of all, it starts at 4 and goes till 5.
Okay.
And that's always been my guarantee to them that 5 o'clock, we're done. Not 5:01, not 5:02, we're done, out the door.
And the beauty of that is by ending at 5, it's the end of the day. People want to get out to go home. So if you run it at 10:30 in the morning or 8:30, 9:30 in the morning, it has greater potential to run off. But running it at the end of the day or right before lunch, it's more likely to indeed end on time.
And the people who are coming to this meeting are primarily teachers who've worked all day, mm-hmm. and they are giving up their time after school to come to this meeting. So the least I can do is make sure that time is used well.
Yeah. What else makes it fun and efficient?
Well, we have a goal that's very specific. We're a committee that's formed for one purpose, to choose a book every year for Napa County Reads, and then to figure out what's going to happen during the fall period when kids are reading the book and we're bringing the author to Napa. So it's very specific. We've been doing it for 11 years. We know it can be spectacular. And even when it's not spectacular, it's okay. So people are there because they want to, they choose to, and they like the results.
You know, something you had told me about the meetings, you know, when you have aimed very, very high. What Napa County Reads, why don't you briefly tell us what it is, and then I'm going to explain what you did this year that enabled everybody to be so pumped up about it.
Well, Napa County Reads is an attempt to keep middle school students reading, because that's when reading falls off. Mm. Only 27% of middle school students read for pleasure. Mm. So our goal was to pick a book that they would really enjoy And at the beginning of the year, they would get excited about reading. We'd bring the author. They would get to meet a real author. And it's always been true that when the author comes to Napa, after the students having read the book, they treat the author like a rock star. Mm-hmm. They're really excited to meet the author.
So tell us, you know, again, in your meeting, in your planning meetings, you aimed very ridiculously high in terms of the book. Tell us what you did this year and
well,
how it got broached in the meeting.
Insanity personified. The group of teachers that I work with are very astute at knowing what's going to work for middle school kids. And they suggested the book Food Rules by Michael Pollan. The reason for that suggestion is as we move to what's famously known as the Common Core standards, it's being recommended that students read more nonfiction, and Food Rules fits perfectly into nonfiction. Students need to be reading from a variety of sources, not just one book, with different points of view, and then being able to form their own opinion, be able to defend it by citing evidence from what they've read.
Yep.
And again, this was the perfect theme because it's all about eating and cooking and what's healthy for us, which picks on the third theme, which is we have an obesity epidemic, and we're trying to teach students how to eat healthy.
But
so this book was perfect.
But staying focused on the topic here, you aimed, you know, it's very easy to pick a book on nutrition, but you didn't, you aimed ridiculously high. The most famous person in the world these days regarding nutrition is Michael Pollan. And he doesn't live in Napa, and yet you, because you made the goal so high, is it correct that the meetings to make this happen got really exciting, and so that the message is aim much bigger and higher than you might otherwise think? Is that accurate or is that wrong?
Well, the part that was the big reach was to try and get him to come to Napa, because he charges lots of money when he speaks, and clearly we're schools, we don't have any money.
Right, charge like $15,000 or $20,000 a speech. What did you get him for?
Nothing.
There you go. So, dear listeners, the takeaway, you know, we're here to talk about meetings. We will talk about meetings. But very often, I'm not talking about Beyonce. Beyonce is not going to come to your office for free. But one level below, there are people, people love to talk about themselves. They love to meet their fans. And if you are, well, I don't, I'll tell you, how did you, well, let me ask you, how did you actually get Michael Pollan?
Well, number one, I was discouraged after talking to the publicist because of the high fee and said, we can't do that. But I researched. He's a professor at Berkeley. I found a way to find his email and contact him directly. You have to be realistic, too. If he lived in New York, I don't know that I could have gotten him to come. But he's 45 minutes away. Number two, I was very persistent, didn't take no for an answer.
How did you do it in a way without being obnoxious? How were you persistent in the way that didn't turn him off?
I offered lots of things. I said, we don't have money, but the whole community will read this book. And when you come to Napa, we will get you some lovely gift certificates to the best restaurants. If you'd like to stay overnight, we will get you accommodations. We will be able to give you some of the finest wines. And if you want to go to a spa, we'll arrange that too.
Stuff that
now,
didn't cost anything.
How could we do that? We could do that because the Napa community is incredibly generous, and we knew the vintners would give us donations. We knew restaurants would give us donations. We knew we could get accommodations at either a very reasonable cost or free, and we got it for free. So you have to know your community and what you can do and what you can offer.
And
you
if
have
you,
to offer something. You can't just say, we want you to come because we want you, and we're not going to pay you anything. That's crazy.
Right. But it was because you aimed big. If you went to Auberge du Soleil or some winery and say, I've got some no-name coming, would you give him a room? They would laugh at you. But by aiming high, aiming at Michael Pollan, I'm sure that motivated all those entities to donate. Is that accurate?
That's probably true. And again, networking, there is nothing more important than networking. And you can't think of it as networking. I don't think anybody wakes up in the morning and says, I think today I'll network. But if you really reach out to groups and people and get to know lots of people, people will come into your life and want to work with you. And so one of the people that came into my life was a woman named Layla, who works for the Lincoln Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the one who said, well, if Michael Pollan is going to come and do an event in Napa, because frankly, I was thinking at Whole Foods with 100 people, mm-hmm. she said, let's do it at the Lincoln Theater. I mm-hmm. said, the Lincoln Theater? How many does that hold? 1,200.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you're out of your mind. We're never going to get 1,200 people to come to a Napa County Reads event. And she said, yeah, we will. We'll mm-hmm. sell it out.
Did you?
And I kind of laughed and envisioned in my mind that we would take the first 10 rows of the theater in the center section, rope them off so he wouldn't feel bad, and turn the lights down so he would feel like he was talking to a group but not an empty theater. And son of a gun, if we didn't sell out standing room only.
Yep. Great, important lessons. You know, I always believe in taking advantage of opportunities that came up. We weren't planning to talk about any of this.
No.
We were going to do the, but
let's get back to me.
But you know what? This is more, this is as or more important in terms of career implications. Thinking big, networking without trying to do it, but just, you know, the reason you network is you go to every event. No, so nobody's thinking you're there to, you know, and nobody runs against you. So it's not like you're worried about getting reelected. It is that you show up everywhere so people don't question your motives. You make networking a part of your life to talk to people, to talk about what you're excited about. And then just in it more organically builds. Because if you just hand out business cards, say, hi, would you do this? It's phony and it doesn't work. But just because you go to everything and you just talk about what you like to do, and you're not like Miss Social. It's not like you're Miss Social Butterfly. You just talk about whatever education project you're working on at the time, and then good things happen. Is that an accurate statement?
Well, that's true, but again, let's be grounded in reality. Mm-hmm. It worked for Michael Pollan. We also invited Michelle Obama because we thought this was the perfect
Well, that's pretty darn high, yeah.
And she turned us down. Mm-hmm. So you can't always win. We happened to hit a big win this year, but it doesn't happen all the time.
I do think
we sent her a lovely invitation
right.
with menus with her name in it and the president's name. We named foods after them with great recipes following the food rules. She still didn't come.
Yeah, well, of course, she's one of the busy, you know, it's like the Beyonce level. I don't begrudge her that. There's just too many things she's got going. By the way, I have a suggestion for you for next year.
Oh, good.
There is a fantastic little book, you know, because I know Food Rules is this small little book that's pretty easy to read. Everybody mm-hmm. can read it. There is a book called The Book of Questions. And The Book of Questions is 101 questions that are thought-provoking that you should ask your friends, ask your parents, just that triggers conversations. Everything about technology, about ethics, about war, about sex, about everything. But I think it's nothing overtly very sexual, but so it might be appropriate for both middle school students and adults. And I'm wondering whether and the guy who wrote it is a very good speaker. He's Dr. Gregory Stock. He was the head of technology, biology, and society at UCLA. He's down in the Bay Area often. He lives, I think, in somewhere like Los Angeles. But look, and it just came out in a brand new revised edition, the Book of Questions. You might check that out.
Absolutely, I will. In fact, could I get off the phone now and Google it?
No, you may not. Now I will torture your butt and give you this how well do you run a meeting quiz, okay?
Okay.
All right. So question one, just say yes or no. If this accurate, I'm going to describe 15 different ideal behaviors in running a meeting. This is not a test. This is more of like an inventory. And I want you to answer honestly, yes or no, whether you basically do each of these 15 things. Okay. Number one.
To qualify it?
I'm sorry. Yeah, you can. Yeah, of course.
Oh, good. Because I'll need to explain why I don't do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're having conversations. This is a conversation.
Okay. You
know. First, I should let our listeners know you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. We are talking about how to run a meeting and other kind of ancillary career-related tips that come up in the course of our conversation. It is my pleasure, always my pleasure, to have my very favorite guest on planet Earth, Dr. Barbara Nemco, my wife and the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, and really is an amazingly successful woman. I'm just blown away by you. You are over 50, and you're
the topic of the show. Let's go on.
Yeah, but it's true. You're well over 50, and yet you continue every year to be more successful. So you're an inspiration for all of us who are over 50, and that's another ancillary reason why you're on the show. Okay, so number one, you carefully decide whether a meeting really is necessary. Usually meetings are needed only when time-sensitive interaction is required. For example, brainstorming to solve an urgent problem. If it isn't time-sensitive, an email soliciting input may better use people's time. One-way communication, such as a progress report, is also usually better handled via email. So, are you very carefully deciding whether a meeting is the best vehicle for what you want to get accomplished?
No.
Explain.
We meet every other week. We have a cabinet meeting with all of the directors of all the different aspects of our operations. So the regional occupational programs, the court and community schools, the business services, blah. We meet every other week. And that's as much, it's rarely to make a specific decision about a particular thing. It's usually more to talk about something like the strategic plan. Where are we? What are we doing? How are we accomplishing what we said we were going to do? What issues have come up? Are there any things that we need to know about, fires that need to be put out? So that is not an action meeting as much as it is a let's make sure we all know what everybody else is doing meeting.
And would, in light of my bringing this to your attention, there is darn good reason to believe that that would be better done through a series of emails or you know, some kind of a Google Doc where everybody puts their input in. Because if it says in a meeting, it can get forgotten. It's real time. You got to think on your feet. Not everybody thinks on their feet. And it takes time. Everybody's got to get their butt to the meeting room at a certain time. Would it be better for something like strategic planning to, indeed, do it primarily by email, asking people to post their thoughts on, say, a Google Doc that everybody can then read?
We do that, too. That happens. Everything goes on. Now we're using SharePoint, but yes, it goes on that kind of a document. However, theoretically, I'm sure that's true. But that's a little bit like saying you can do professional development in a webinar. That's true, rather than going there. But I have to tell you that with the incredible tsunami of email, it is so easy to not pay attention to anybody else's report on something. I don't really want to stop in the middle of my email to read what the ROP director is going to tell me at this school and that school. And for me, I will remember it a whole lot better if I hear it face-to-face and get to ask questions, and that works. That's more efficient for me.
Okay.
But if I need to go back, it's in the minutes, or if it's in a plan, it's on a Google Doc or a SharePoint.
I'm not sure I agree, but it doesn't matter. We're here to hear multiple sides of the issue. Okay.
Because I have to tell you, I mentioned webinars. I probably get announcements of 50 webinars every day.
Right.
So I usually do none of them.
Let me take your side for a minute. There is something that is just different psychologically, chemically about in-person meetings that create greater bonds.
Mm-hmm.
So while intellectually and rationally what I describe is true, even me, and I am not social at all, I was invited to a conference, to present at a conference, and I usually hate going to conferences, especially if it involves a lot of travel. But I swear, having gone there, there is this connection thing that happens among people that you just, that is really very important, you know, for building relationships, for learning, and for fun. Heaven forbid I use the word fun in relation to the word career. So, yes, there is a value to the in-person, even in a world in which driving somewhere is a pain in the butt, flying somewhere is an even bigger pain in the butt. It still, at times, is very worthwhile. Let's go to the second question on the how to run a meeting self-inventory. To what extent, Barbara, is this true of you? You carefully decide who needs to attend at a meeting. Attend a meeting. Often, fewer people need attend than one might first think. If a person might be offended at not being invited, explain why his or her time would be better used elsewhere. To what extent do you do that?
It depends. If you're talking about our regular cabinet meetings, we don't say, Jill, you don't need to be here today, because all of the managers do need to know what's going on throughout the office, because our tentacles are so wide throughout the county.
Why not just send them the minutes? Let's say Jill is really not going to be...
I told you why, because I think people won't read them.
Okay.
People are just too overwhelmed by all these emails, and minutes tend to be long, and aren't going to read them.
Well,
that's why.
I think
there is that importance of being a team, and you can't be a team by email. You can be a team by email in between face-to-face, but we are working very hard to have a positive culture and climate in our office where people work hard because they want the office to shine. And we do that by being together and kind of reinforcing each other. And that gets lost in an email. Having said that, that's a once every 2 weeks meeting that used to be in the morning, and I moved it to the end of the day for the very reason that in the morning it was using up prime work time and would extend to fill the time available. Right. In the afternoon, it's got a dead stop time, and it's the end of the day when people are not quite at the top of their game, so it's a better time to have a meeting. Having said all that, most of the other meetings that take place are very specific. Only the people that need to be involved are asked to come to those meetings, and those meetings may be 10 minutes. Like, okay, here's an issue, really important. Can you be here 2 o'clock? Let's do this, and you may be done by 2:20.
Speaking of those brief meetings, this I'm going to skip ahead to another item on this that's related to that. Do you consider making your meetings a stand-up meeting? A Stanford study suggests that more gets accomplished if the attendees are standing, especially if the meetings are 10 to 20 minutes long. Have you done that, or do you think you might actually like to do that?
Haven't done that. I do remember hearing that Mary Jane Burke, who's the county superintendent in Marin, has done that. But that's not so much my style.
Okay, moving on. Well, I know you haven't done it. Why is that? Well, let's dig deeper.
Because I don't want to stand.
Okay, moving on. Number three.
That's why.
All right.
I think being uncomfortable is not necessarily the best way to get things done.
Well, it makes people be concise. They don't want to stand for an hour, and so it gets them get to the point. You know, people attend meetings, and they're long-winded, and they love to hear themselves talk. And I would think that standing up builds in a censor that would keep people concise. You don't buy that?
That's true. There are a couple of people who tend to be long-winded. But imagine if you're standing and one of those long-winded people is talking and that person doesn't get the message that you're standing, so you won't talk so long, and everybody else is standing and being really unhappy, and then they're going to think, Nemco, she needs to get out of here. This is crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it would have a self-censoring mechanism without having to bludgeon people into shutting up. Anyway, next item. To what extent do you do this, Barbara? 1 or 2 days before a meeting, you send an agenda to the attendees. Because discussions tend to expand to fill the time allotted, you allocate as little time to each agenda item as is reasonable.
Do I do that? Sometimes. That does require a certain level of efficiency. But honestly, I get lots of agendas in advance. And that in no way means that the meeting is run any more efficiently.
Let's go to number four. Again, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. I'm giving Barbara a meeting quiz, some of what are considered best practices in running a meeting, and getting Barbara to honestly answer to what extent she uses those techniques, and if not, why. In agenda items, you list the desired outcome. For example, agreement on a new pay structure rather than discuss a new pay structure. When you do send an agenda, do you focus on listing the outcome rather than the process?
Guilty, no.
Okay. Think you might change any? So far, you've been defending your status quo practice. is there any damn thing you want to change, or are you just stuck in your own ways?
I'm stuck in my own way. Again, there are so many meetings. Let's look at our board meetings. Our board meetings are very specific that way. They are required that we have them, and we have them once a month. And yes, the items on the agenda are grouped. There are consent agenda items, which are items that really don't require any discussion but require board approval. And so those can be taken all together. The items 1, 2, 3, and 4, all in favor, aye, finished. It was described, you got the backup information, you can do it. Then there are action items that need to be discussed one at a time, and then the specific action that we want is listed. So, yes, in those kind of meetings, we absolutely do that.
All right, let's do the next question. As appropriate, you assign an individual to take charge of agenda items. So in other words, if it's a given topic, it's not that Barbara Nemco is in charge of all the items, but you may say, Jill, I'd like you to make to lead the discussion about blah. Do you assign
it? Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay,
depends
next.
What the item is.
Good, of course. Next, do you solicit feedback on the agenda in time to make changes?
That would assume that I'd always sent an agenda,
I know,
which I admitted 2 questions ago.
No,
I don't.
But you said you also, for board meetings, you do have an agenda and you're in charge of that.
Oh, yeah.
So do you solicit, do you send it in time to make changes?
Change the agenda. The board knows that they can call about any agenda item when they get their packet and question or whatever. Is there time to change it? Probably not, because it's due by law a certain number of days in advance. It's got to be posted in various places. So there are a lot of rules on that kind of
meeting. Yeah, but let's say if it has to be posted by 3 days before,
right,
why wouldn't you send the agenda 6 days before so that there's plenty enough time to get input from the board? But I mean, certainly defend not doing that, but I'm just curious why you wouldn't do that.
To get it out 6 days before,
yeah,
that means it has to be ready several days before that. I guess we could, and I'm trying to think of some instance in which the board would want to change anything. They do have, at the start of those meetings, there's an item that says approving the agenda. So if they would like to see a change in the agenda, they can do it at that point at the meeting publicly and say, item 2B, I want to do whatever, or I want to pull something out of the consent agenda items. So that's where they have their choice.
Yeah, it seems to me that they should have, you know, sometimes you want a day to think about it, and there's not a lot of disadvantage to making sure that the agenda items are, the agenda is sent to them a day or two before the drop-dead deadline so that they can have it make changes. But anyway, let's move on.
Well, I will see if we can possibly do that.
Just a thought. If you think it's a bad idea, that's fine. Next item on the do you know how to run a meeting quiz here. If it would help, do you assign someone to take notes and produce the minutes, including who would be responsible for what post-meeting tasks?
Yes, my executive assistant takes minutes at the meetings and sends it out to everybody.
Including who's going to be responsible for doing what after the meeting?
If somebody needs to be responsible for doing something, yes, that would be included in the minutes.
And
absolutely.
do you make that a point? We say, okay, Mary, you're going to take charge of this afterwards. I mean,
well, again, remember the purpose of the meeting that I'm talking about right now, which is, let's go back to the internal meetings, the cabinet meetings. It's pretty obvious. If it has to do with facilities, Jill's going to be in charge. If it has to do with career technical education, Tammy's going to be in charge, because you have the department heads of each of the groups. So, that would be a given.
What I'm saying is that, like at the board meetings, for example, let's say you're trying to take a look at whether indeed iPads should be used in more preschools. You know, assigning somebody to that task to visit the Up Valley preschools or the American Canyon preschools to see, you know, what to take the temperature of the teachers. Assigning one human being to that and putting that in the minutes. Do you do that, and does that seem like a good idea?
Well, again, there wouldn't be a choice. It would be the director of the program that deals with early childhood iPads, and it might say Andy to follow up or Andy to investigate.
Okay.
Or
let's
Andy
go to next
to
question.
Meet with so and so.
Okay, as appropriate, you assign a stuff disturber to propose bold ideas and to question other ideas. That avoids the too common occurrence of meetings generating tepid, lowest common denominator plans.
Ooh, interesting. No, haven't done that.
Do you think, if we were in Vegas, should we bet that you would do it or would not do it?
I don't know. I'll have to read more about it.
I don't know. Ask me a question about it. I mean,
think
about it. There's usually some person who by nature is very good at being contrarian, really smart, comes up with great ideas, but often gets shut down by the group because the group doesn't like that. But if,
oh, are you going to come to our meeting?
Yeah, I would love to. If you have too many stuff disturbers, it creates chaos. But having somebody there to be bold and who's explicitly given license to disagree boldly and propose completely out-of-the-box ideas, that is part of the mix in a meeting, which I think is very important. What do you think?
And actually assign someone
yes.
the job.
Yes, and it can vary. It can either be one person who clearly stands out as that person is just by nature great at that, and that person becomes the designated stuff disturber, not to preclude others from doing that, but or you could decide it rotates. so that it gives everybody a chance, you know, if they want to, or they can volunteer for the role in advance. Is there anybody who'd like to, if I'm at a meeting and I've got seven people at the meeting, I say, okay, who would like to volunteer to be the stuff disturber for next meeting? And it could be the same person, it could be somebody new, because not everybody's good at that. So I wouldn't rotate so everybody can do it, but I would take volunteers. And it's fun.
I will definitely think about that.
Okay. Definitely think about it. Okay. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko talking about how to run a meeting. We're on a question.
Or how not to, in my case.
Right. We're running. The back and forth is, you know, wisdom does, you know, it's the reason, it's the whole basis of our American system of jurisprudence, that it's that two different people presenting sometimes opposing positions, we get closer to the truth as a result of it. But unlike in courts, where we agree, we legitimately agree to agree. We don't have to just argue. We argue when we need to. We agree when we can. I think it's great. You don't have to do everything the way I'm suggesting. Okay, next item. You arrange for food to be available. Food lubricates conversation, especially in meetings that could be contentious.
You're asking me if I arrange for food?
Well, I know the answer, but our listeners don't.
Of course I arrange for food. Our board meetings used to start at 5 and go until 8, so we always brought in sandwiches and salads and because people get really cranky if they miss dinner. Mm-hmm. Now we've moved them to starting at 4, so the idea is that we should be able to get out by 6:30, and therefore people can go home and have dinner with the people that they love rather than the people that they're there to work with. But we still usually bring in some kind of snack, cheese and crackers or fruit or something, because people get hungry. Our cabinet meetings, we always have popcorn or nuts or something.
I am shocked at your answer.
Really?
Yes, because I was sure you were going to talk about your miracle conversation lubricator, the ultimate tool, the ultimate weapon for disarming anybody, your home-baked what?
Brownies?
Yes. How often do you not bring hot, warm brownies right before you go to a morning meeting that has just come out of the oven at 8 in the morning, and you take it and you bring it with you to a meeting, like especially a contentious one with the unions or whatever?
Oh, what a lovely idea. I haven't done that in years. I haven't even thought about it.
That's your best thing.
I did do that for many years.
That's your best thing. Who can argue when you've got the smell of hot brownies in the middle of the table?
Maybe I haven't had enough contentious meetings.
Yeah. Well, I'm ordering you. To hell with this collaborative consensus-building discussion. I am ordering you to resurrect the making of your amazing brownies in any time that you have an important meeting, especially a contentious one. If you have to use the stove in your office, do that home in your office. That's an order, Dr. Nemko. What do you think?
Next time I have a contentious meeting early in the morning, I will definitely do that.
All right. Next.
Not brownies, not early in the morning.
Whatever. Okay. Next question. In meetings, if someone is dominating, you usually say something like, let's be sure other people get an opportunity to talk.
Yeah, or let's hear from so-and-so. What do you think about this so-and-so?
But you do do that. You don't let, you know, when I attend the meeting and the person who's running the meeting is too wimpy and lets somebody, because it's, you know, they're trying, it's not polite to interrupt, and they go and they let this person who's a blowhard who doesn't really have a lot to say keep going on and on. Do you interrupt people if it serves the common good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think about that on the radio, too. When somebody calls into this show, I am constantly thinking of one thing: what's going to best serve my listeners? And I will often interrupt because people calling into the show, they're not masters at being concise. And so if they are long-winded, I will interrupt. And I will routinely get an email from somebody, it's very rude to interrupt. Well, it actually is appropriate and serves the good of folks to interrupt as appropriate, not too much. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, you're definitely better at that than I am, but yes.
Okay, next item. At the end of each agenda item, now we're talking about during a meeting, you summarize the person who's running the meeting, including who will be responsible for any post-meeting tasks. Do you do a good job of crisply summarizing a discussion on appropriate meeting items?
Do you mean at the end of the total meeting?
No, at the end of each agenda item.
during each item, I think, yes, if there's something that has to happen, yes, we do that and say, will you tell us about that at the next meeting?
What I'm saying is, you know, we all know one of the rules about public speaking is tell them what you're going to tell them and then tell them what you told them. People feel good to have a capstone brief summary. So if an, I'm not saying for a 1 minute agenda item, but if there's been a 15-minute agenda item in which something is discussed, for you to capstone that, for somebody running the meeting to capstone it by saying, okay, so there were three major points that were made here. Mary said this, John said this, and Jose said that. And it seems like in light of that, we're going to do this. I think we did a great job on this agenda item. Jose is going to take charge of following up. Let's move to the next item. That kind of a summary gives a sense of closure that I think people find very valuable. What do you think about that, Barb?
Oh, I think that's very true. Do I always do it? No. Do I do it sometimes? Yes. Should I do it more often? Yes.
Okay. I'm going to check up on you next week and see if you do it.
Okay.
I'm half joking. Two more items on this quiz. If a new topic is suggested during a meeting, unless it's clearly more important and urgent than the agenda items, you park them on a whiteboard, kind of an idea bin, to be addressed later. Do you do that?
I've certainly done that many times. Again, there's so many meetings, it's very hard to figure out which meeting you do which thing for, or even to make a statement about what you do, quote, at meetings.
Why would you not, on a, just a general rule, when somebody, why would that not be a blanket rule across all meetings? If somebody brings up a topic that is, you know, whether it's a great topic or a bad topic, but it's off topic for the meeting, why wouldn't that be a standard rule that you would indeed put it on a whiteboard or, you know, a flip chart or whatever and say, that's a great idea, let's discuss, we'll put that on the agenda.
Those parking lot items.
Right, exactly.
Because if it's a board meeting, then it's a given that it would be, it would go under upcoming agenda items or new agenda items for the next meeting. If it's a cabinet meeting and we're really reviewing and talking about what's happening in each area and somebody comes up with something, we're very likely going to discuss it there.
Right.
Because it's, if they brought it up and it's something that is of critical importance, why are we going to wait 2 weeks to talk about it some other time? We're going to talk about it.
All right. Before we get to the last question, I want to invite the listeners to call in if they have a question or a comment about meetings specifically, not 3 minute workovers. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. But if you have been listening to this discussion of meetings and how to run them well, and you either have a question for Barbara or me about that, a specific problem you're facing with perhaps a meeting attendee or a difficult meeting that you're about to plan, or you have a comment on what we're saying because you think we're wildly off base or want to amplify or praise us, heaven forbid, and, we invite you to call. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now I will ask you the last question. So, do you review the minutes that are taken by Nancy, your executive assistant, and then distribute those minutes to meetings within 1 day of the meeting? Afterwards, it kind of gets stale. Do you do that?
We review them and, depending, our meetings, our cabinet meetings happen at the end of the day, so the minutes probably don't always go out the next day. It might go out the day after.
No big deal. All right.
Pretty efficient about that. With our board meetings, no, I don't think the minutes go out until the next month's packet goes out.
Wow. Do you think that's good, or do you want to change that?
Well, I'm trying to think of any item that the board would need to take action on that I might not. If it was something really important that I wanted them to do, I would probably put that in a board letter, which is not an official part of any meeting packet, but it would deal with the issue.
Okay, so now having gone through these 15 items, is there honestly one or two that you will actually take action on about so to help you run meetings even better than you already do?
Clearly, I know that I should send an agenda out in advance. And lots of times I do, and lots of times I don't. So, yes, I will make more of an attempt to get that agenda out to people in time for them to give me feedback. This does not necessarily mean for our board meetings, but for other meetings. And I like the summarizing at the end of an item.
I am struck by the fact that you have not mentioned adding the assigning a stuff disturber to each meeting.
Oh, I think we got plenty of stuff disturbers.
No, you
they
don't.
They feel the need to disturb. There's
No, there's so much tepidness at meetings. And frankly, I know educators, let's just be polite, are certainly not immune from that. So that is my strongest recommendation to you, is that you at least do a trial at your next strategic planning meeting, that you do indeed ask one person to be a designated stuff disturber and try it out. What do you have to lose?
Okay, for the strategic planning, that would be fun because maybe somebody will come up with some bold, wild new idea that we hadn't thought of.
Or you could ask me to go. As you know, I love stuff disturbing, so I would be more than pleased to join you on a one-time basis to model what one approach to being a stuff disturber is. Would you allow me to do that?
That is absolutely I will take it under advisement.
Deep under advisement. Anyway, let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What's your question or comment for us?
Yes, thank you very much. You might have covered this. I didn't hear every single comment. But I would appreciate hearing from your wife about how she deals with a situation where someone says something that really seems to her to at a meeting, it really seems to her to be, I want to say ridiculous, or let's just use that word, and advocating something, but she recognizes the person is sincere. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with responding to such a thing without being at all, you might say, insulting?
Great question. Barbara, what do you think?
I would probably just make a very neutral comment and say, and just leave it there.
Sometimes,
if the person comes back and says, well, no, what do you think? Do you think we want to do this? I would say, well, I think that bears some talking about. Maybe you and I can get together after the meeting or maybe tomorrow and let's flesh this out a little bit before we say that this is something we want to do.
That sounds great to me. Caller, what do you think about that?
I think it's a very difficult circumstance, particularly if one's own self has a feeling in say chairing the meeting that they're trying to go in one direction and the person seems to be throwing them off track. But obviously, one of the roles of someone who is conducting the meeting is to recognize the sincerity of everyone who's in attendance and to try to respect that in the way in which they say things and what they say. But also not let things get completely off course.
I really like, I love what Barbara said, because a comment's half-life is very short. If Barbara didn't made a whole long response, it kind of takes on a life of its own. But if she just kind of says, thank you for that comment, and then redirects to another question, it tends to fade away. The person feels heard. She avoided directly confronting anybody. She avoided making anybody feel less than, but she let it die of its own volition. And I thought it was great, again, if Barbara said, if he continued or she continued, then to say, let's talk about it privately. That's a way of dissipating it without invalidating the person at all, and the meeting can proceed relatively unimpeded.
Sounds very good.
She's great. That's a great point. And thank you very much for your good call. Appreciate
it
a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, you take care. We have, I think, Barbara, I think we've milked this for all it's worth. Is there anything else I'm going to give you just my usual one softball question at the end. We're blessed to have about 7,000 people listening to the show at this moment. I want you to picture that they you're now talking to them, and instead of in this vague thing called on the air, they're in the Oakland Coliseum listening to you. And you have one more thing that you wanted to say to them about running a meeting that we haven't yet discussed or is so important that it's worth reiterating.
Wow. That's a big question.
Mm-hmm. Take a moment.
Off the top of my head. Don't have more meetings than you have to, but don't shy away from getting people together because it is important to team build. You spend more time with the people that you work with than you do with your spouse or your kids. And you have to be in a place where people like each other and want to pull together for the good of the organization. Once you have people who are not happy and not feeling a part of things, then it's really easy for them to go around and be those, what did you call them? I would call them some other kind of disturber.
Right.
You don't want those people in your organization. And that is another piece of it. People, everybody's job is different, and a lot of people only see one small part of it and don't see the big picture of what the whole organization is doing. And it's important that they feel bought into the purpose of the organization. And so sometimes you have to have meetings just so that they can know everything that's going on, so they feel why it's important to come to work every day and why their piece of it makes a difference.
I think integrating what you just said with your response to the caller, it really is true. You know, certain people, and I'm myself included, when I was younger, I really did believe in the classic jurisprudence point, which is, you know, that you just argue your way to truth and that's good. But I think the older I get, the more I realize the power of inclusion. Fighting and arguing rarely changes people's minds. And sometimes being more subtle, not necessarily confronting an issue, letting it slide, ultimately may do more good. Inviting more people to meetings, even if somebody is a pain, and then without fighting them when they make a stupid comment or whatever, kind of just subtly saying, let's talk about it later, or just say, thank you for your comment, and moving on.
That or let's take that one offline.
Yeah, exactly. All that kind of stuff. I think net, for improving the cosmos, your organization, society, whatever, I think being less direct in that way is probably wise. Is that a fair summary?
Absolutely.
Well, as usual, my favorite guest, Dr. Barbara Nemco, it was a pleasure having you on. And I will look forward to seeing you later. We're doing the one woman show I'm playing the piano for at my home in Oakland, and Barbara's going to be serving champagne.
I am not the one woman show. Let's be very clear.
No, that's true.
That.
Your singing is not, you know, that is not one of your great strengths. I will admit. In any case,
we have a fabulous singer who will be doing a one woman show.
We do indeed. Jeffrey Gibbons, who's been on this show, is doing her show One Big Black and Shy. It's really an inspiring story. And by the way, there are a few seats, if I cram them in, put a few more seats in. If, dear listeners of KALW, if there's somebody you're not doing anything today between starting at around 1:30 or the show starts actually at 2, if you'd like to come, email me. I will be checking, and if there's still a seat or two available, I will give you directions how to get here. My email address is mnemko@comcast.net, mnemko@comcast.net. Something I never thought about doing that, but I could squeeze a couple more seats in, and I care about you, my listeners at KALW, not quite as much as I care about my lovely wife and smart wife, Dr. Barbara Nemco. Barb, thanks very much. I'll see you in a little while.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Bye.
Okay. What I want to do, I guess this is the right time to then move to 3-minute career makeovers or workovers, whatever you want to call them. So if you are stuck or someone you love is stuck in any aspect of your career, whether it has to do with a meeting or not, whether you're unemployed, extremely well employed, any aspect of your work problem, don't know what you want to be when you grow up, can't land a job, hate your boss, hate your supervisees, are suffering from a crisis of meaning, wondering whether you should go back to school, any kind of career or a business. Let's say you would like to run your business idea by me. Pretend I'm a venture capitalist and I'd let you know whether I'd fund you or not. And why? I'll ask you questions. Any kind of career-related question, this is the time to call before the lines fill up. The number here at Work with Marty Nemco for a 3-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You know, there is a tendency, I've never seen an economy as difficult in my 26 years of being a career counselor. I've never had as difficult a job trying to get people work. And so there is a dramatic need for something positive. I don't like Pollyanna radio, but just a couple of little stories to provide a bit of inspiration with a couple of maybe non-obvious lessons. Neil Dixon was sick of working in a tannery. He was burning cowhide into leather. And so he went back to school to become an accountant, and he got a job. And after a year, it was time for a salary review, and he'd done really well, and they gave him a nice title, but just a few percent raise. I see that again and again in my employees. I just got out of my last client Friday afternoon was this guy who was doing amazing things. He had learned how to commandeer a group that was brazing, B-R-A-Z-I-N-G, metal to be used in linear accelerators. I mean, this is a very high-level job. Praise, 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 praise. What do? They offered him in a salary review a 5% raise. The guy is bringing in millions to the company. It makes me puke. You know, I'm not some radical egalitarian, but there is something wrong about a guy who's adding, literally, I imagine he's adding millions of dollars of value. And the guy is making just a bare, you know, not bare, a reasonable middle class living, but he deserves more than that. It makes me puke. Anyway, so this guy, Neil Dixon, and he gave, you know, this is posted on the internet, so he's given permission. I'm not revealing any confidence here, and it's certainly a success story anyway. He was sickened by that, getting that few percent raise, and so he quit. And in the interim, he helped his brother with his window cleaning business, even though he was scared of heights. But he got to like it. And more important, his brother was lazy, and he did very little marketing. And so Neil took over the business, got aggressive about marketing it, and now his business is thriving. True story of Neil Dixon, a positive story. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It is your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello, it's
Hi,
you.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing, sir? Well, kind of give you a background about myself. So right now I'm working for one of the top tech companies here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Mm-hmm. I'm 27 years old. I'm making around $130,000 a year. I'm working as a contract recruiter, mm-hmm. and I'm doing well for myself at the time being. My question to you is that: do you think it would be beneficial for me to go and get my MBA to further my career, or do you think that's if the way that things are going right now? Do you think that's too much of an investment on my end?
It's a great question. Of course, it varies with the individual. If somebody really loves school, loves the process, maybe, and if you can get into a top-tier school like a Stanford or, you know, or Berkeley or, you know, Haas. But in general, I find the opportunity cost too great. The 2 years or 3 years of time, the six figures in money cost, and the fact that so much of what you learn in the MBA program is theoretical. I am well aware that we live in a society that genuflects before degrees, including the MBA. But there is in recent years been an oversupply even of prestigious MBAs because universities know that the MBA is a cash cow. So Wharton, the most prestigious business school in America, has set up Wharton West and takes all kinds of students here on the West Coast. Columbia has an MBA program, and there is executive MBA program. So there's a relative glut of them, which makes the calculus for going and getting the MBA even worse because it's not at all a rare commodity anymore. So all things being equal, I believe if you're working for a top technology company, that usually means there are some very top interesting people. The way I would try to enhance my career would be to find those people who are really A players, who are nonetheless in the mentor who like mentoring. And I have to admit this, that all things being equal, women are better and more interested in the mentoring than are men. But certainly I would not exclude men, but I would try to find multiple mentors. You don't need one to work with you. For example, offer to volunteer to work on a project with them. Or ask their advice about something. Ask if they would read some thoughts you might have about the art of recruiting in the year 2014. A combination of those mentoring experiences, plus attending the right conferences, giving talks at conferences about something you care about or have experience with. I think that net is going to be more a betting of your career practically and more fun than going back for an MBA. But that's generic advice because I don't know you. What is your honest reaction to that idea for you?
I think you have a very valid point in that, you know, I've kind of already progressed my career to make it to this level in recruiting, which is fantastic because this company that I'm working for is, you know, one of the largest companies in search. You could probably put that to a notion and guess what it is. But, at 27 years old, I have the ability to, you know, self-sustain myself and, you know, I'm successful as far as in the eyes of a lot of my peers. So, you know, that being said, you're right in that, you know, am I making that investment where I can network myself and already kind of progress myself as an individual without having to go back and get that degree? At the same token, you know, recruiting is kind of, it's becoming a little bit of a dying trade.
Right.
You know, there's, you know, all these job boards and new intuitive ways
of
recruiting where they don't need someone to hit the phone 24/7.
Right.
You know, so, but if I ever want to, you know, go jump into maybe like an account manager role from recruiting or sales, you know, it's a good backbone to have that degree, but not necessarily if you have those connections, I feel, outside of your, you know, within your realm.
I could not agree with you more. I do think that recruiting is a dying field. There are, just for exactly the reason you said, there are ever more sophisticated and smarter ways to recruit people than having somebody make phone calls. But I do think that what you're going to want to do is, you, of course, I want you to make that career transition. And if, you know, recruiting is a sales job largely. And so I encourage you to, I'm assuming you're at Google because of what you said, premier, you know, search engine company that doesn't take a genius. So, you know, and Google still does attract some of the smartest people in the world. I would find their sales engineers, their leading salespeople, not just sales engineers, but salespeople, and try to transition into where is the growth in Google sales? I don't think it's Google AdWords anymore. I would bet that they have other products that they're trying to monetize, and I would try to find what is the cutting edge of what Google is trying to sell. Speak to those salespeople. Say that you're trying to affect a transition from being in recruiting, which is sales, to what they're selling in sales. And, of course, something, you know, you may not be equally interested in Google Earth as you are in Google the driverless cars or whatever. But look at where the growth appears to, where the priority appears to be increasing in Google. Find the person or persons who are selling that and ask the question that you're trying to make the transition from where you are now into selling products like that, and see if that is the basis on which a mentorship and training and a transition could be effected. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. I appreciate the time.
It is my pleasure. Thanks very much for calling Work with Marty Nemko. I don't have time for another call. So, you know, next week, while when we have more time, I have no guests next week. The whole show is devoted mainly to you. So do call in next time. In the little amount of time we have left, I'm just going to read you. I have a minute. A very interesting letter I got from Doug Smith, who did give permission for me to read. I'm just going to read little. This is a 57-year-old guy, ex-technology worker with slightly out-of-date skills. Here's what he wrote. I just thought I'd share this with you. In rare cases, there are some elder workers with good pedigrees who are working alongside 20-somethings. Having been there and done that, I have to say it's less than ideal. The kids, those 20-year-old engineers, can be cliquish and don't like collaborating with older guys. That's just the reality. He says, I need to keep my skills up to date and stay busy, but I don't want to burn out, and I can't work in kindergarten-like environments either. I need quietude to actually be productive. It certainly makes sense to me. Some people are so serious, they give off a negative electrical charge. Others are so happy-go-lucky, downright clueless, it's amazing they're employed at all. And then there are plenty of talented slackers who can skate through the day without a worry. Of course, being talented and quick-witted can help. He then says most large companies are extremely cautious about hiring elders. And because I'm looking at the clock, we don't really have time. But I think the largest message is, if you're older, don't think that necessarily it's your fault or you're undesirable. Sell your strength. Sell your age as a strength. Every organization could use some people who are older and have more wisdom and not silly. Please, I've seen them. I get a lot of my clients who are over 50 do get hired if they're good and not tech afraid. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute workovers on callers, and probably it's a 2-packed show. I'm going to talk about where the job growth is. I'm going to give you the How Employable Are You quiz. I'm going to discuss the pros and cons of forcing fast food restaurants to pay all its workers at least $15 an hour. I'll do my very best to be even-handed. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.